Thanks for joining us for this episode of Journey Now, produced by Journey Church in Brentwood, Tennessee. For more information on Journey Church and our gatherings, please visit us at journeytn.com.
From Journey Church in Brentwood, Tennessee, I'm Grant Opperman, and this is the Journey Now Wednesday Roundtable. Welcome back again, everyone. We are so excited to have you join us in this, our second week of all new formats. If you've been listening the last week, you've heard Mike Mondays, which are Mike Erie's skeptical-eyed conversations with guests about Christian issues. Tim Timmons does 10K Tuesdays, all about putting our faith into practice. On Thursdays, Kevin Dixon leads what he calls Theology Thursdays, basically digging deep into what we believe and why we believe it with Mike Erie and Susie Lind. And speaking of Susie, she hosts Formation Fridays, which are conversations with guests that are meant to be about growing in our faith and living out our identities in Christ. Here on Wednesdays, I host a gathering of pastors every week as they take on cultural issues. Not that we have any of those in 2021.
Yeah, we're good with that. We're good with that.
Yeah, totally fine.
And today we are looking at the state of Christian music. So with me here to discuss that are some of our music involved pastors at Journey Church and staff. Let me introduce them to you really quickly. The first voice you heard there, I mean, you would never know he's an artist from his voice because it doesn't sound at all like a singer, is Pastor Tim Timmons.
I don't know how to take that. I don't know how to take that, Grant.
I'm also joined by Sam Barnhart, who is our care pastor at Journey. He's waving at you, which is going to be really offensive.
Does that matter? Are we just doing audio? Hey, guys.
In addition to being our care pastor, Sam is also was also part of a band you might have known called Bleach. And I'm also have Brett Mabry with me, who is an amazing musician and string arranger, as well as being our Journey Arts pastor. Hi, Brett.
Hey, Grant. Hi, everybody.
And last but way far from least is Caitlin Hill, who is, what is your title now? You used to be worship designer. Is that still it?
Yeah, we can go with that. I oversee the music here with Tim. So
I like
good to be
it.
Here, everybody. You, I just put on whatever hat.
You oversee the music. So that's perfect. Yep. So let me start here. There is some great music being made in 2021. So before I go deeper into a discussion, I want to know what artists or songs, let's start with Christian, are on your playlist right now, if any. Also, what music from other genres is inspiring you at this exact moment? Anyone want to start?
Gosh, I wish, you know, people ask this question all the time, like, so who are you listening to? And I just don't, this is Tim, by the way.
Well, I was going to say ladies first, Tim, but you just jump right in there.
I mean, it's
same diff. I don't listen to a lot of music. And I was trying to think of Christian music that's on my playlist, and I don't know if I have any.
Shocking confessions right here on the Journey Now roundtable. What else do you listen to when you listen to music, Tim, outside of sort of the
I love singer-songwriters. I love people that are asking good questions, like Sleeping at Last. I absolutely love anything he does because his lyrics are just, they're outrageous. I mean, I'm a different human after being a part of that experience. It's not just a pop song. It's an actual experience. And coming from a songwriter, that's what I get to do. I strive to do that, and it's hard to do that sometimes, and even in my genre.
What about you, Brett?
I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the pandemic or just the state of our world, but I have gone back to my teenage years, my young adult years, and have been listening to and before I was alive, actually. But I've been listening to the Beatles. I've been listening to Paul Simon. I've been listening to the Rolling Stones. I've been listening to Dire Straits. It's like, for whatever reason, I've been diving into all that great old music, some of the old tracks from Stevie Wonder. I've kind of been living in that world. As well as that, I've been enjoying the music of some of the great cinematic composers. So John Debney, Hans Zimmer, John Williams, Ennio Morricone. So yeah, they're my kind of go-tos at the moment.
So Caitlin, you're 28. I'm sure you're like way deep into Dire Straits and the Beatles as well, right?
Right. You know, some millennials are that cool and are on that level. And I am just, I'm not quite one of them. I feel like I represent the demographic that I do definitely have a good amount of Christian music. Well, I would say I'm more tapped into like the worship worlds, which is kind of in some ways its own thing. So I love having like peaceful kind of calm music that comes out of Bethel or their artists that they have, just sort of as like backdrop to the day. But then when I'm not listening to worship, I love some good pop music. Like, I'm just going to own it. Like, I love Justin Bieber's new stuff.
Oh, so good.
Because it's just good. And, but when I'm in like a singer-songwriter mood, I mean, I love Johnny Swim. I love Need to Breathe. Anything that's just like interesting and feels different and creative, and kind of get happy with like a lot of different genres.
But we're not talking about Yummy, right?
Honestly, I mean, no judgment because it's kind of a bop. So
we all have guilty pleasures.
It's true. And that record, that album is pretty awesome.
So Sam, bring us home.
Well, I think for me, it's interesting because of this last year, I tend to go to things that feel real familiar. So a lot of what I've listened to is, it's funny, but it's like a lot of old, like Christian metal stuff that I grew up with, like, you know, Vengeance Rising or White Cross or, you know, and that's a broad spectrum, but even between those two bands. But current music that I love, there's a band called Manchester Orchestra that I think writes incredible songs and kind of always pushing the envelope. And then I tend to go to music that kind of brings me back to places that felt good. And I don't know if that's just because of 2020 or just because I'm getting older or just because it inspires me. But, you know, my favorite songwriter of all time is Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys. So a lot of Beach Boys stuff. And in my family, you kind of had the Beach Boys and Johnny Cash and Hank Williams Sr. Like, it was this weird, you know, kind of Midwestern mix of artists. So artists like that, I really enjoy. You know, even I love seeing some of the creativity that is, you know, it used to be a record. Kind of culture where a record told a story. Now it's kind of almost gone back to like the 50s, 60s where it's a singles market. You know, like Post Malone, I think he's a pretty, you know, interesting artist to me. And so my taste is really broad. I like good music. I don't care what like genre it fits in. Like if it's a great song, it's a great song. And so whether that was written 70 years ago or whether it was written in 2020, you know?
So I feel like this discussion is going to really quickly go into this whole idea of genre and formatting. I mean, even Caitlin, when you mentioned it, you were talking about, well, there's Christian music and then there's worship music, and that's really sort of its own thing. And so you have this, I guess what you would call CCM that you hear on the radio, but it seems like it's a really narrow format of music that has a specific sound, a specific market that it's aimed at. Maybe it isn't a Christian question at all, but just more about music in general. Are we at a place now where we can't sort of go across boundaries, where if you're a worship song, you can't be a Christian song, or you can't be a metal song, or you can't be something else? What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, in Christian radio, I mean, that's my world that I live in. And you know, when you're writing something, you know, I am technically now with a label called Integrity, and it's mostly a worship music label. And so this past record that I've done is different for me because it's all kind of more in that genre. And those worlds are really kind of coming together a lot more than they ever have been before. But yeah, I mean, it's popular music, right? I mean, it's just like pop music. It just doesn't change as much. It's just slower to catch up to what actual pop music is in the mainstream. It's a really hard deal because you're almost trying to reach everybody with your music, hence popular music. And it's impossible, really, well, for the most part, to reach everybody with our songs in all genres with your one song. And I think that's what my genre is trying to do, is trying to appease everybody. And when you do that, it generally doesn't work.
Hey, Tim, can I ask a question? You would have had to change mindset, right? So when you wrote songs for this last album, how did you approach it differently? Like, was when you were writing a song for your previous albums, was it a different posture or a different headspace for you?
Yeah, in my past records, it was half like corporate, a song that a whole church community could sing together. That's what I call a corporate, you know, song. And then there are just art songs of just things that I'm walking through and I'm literally writing the prayer that I need to pray by myself in my room. And then hopefully somebody else would need to pray that in their room. I think I'm using the same technique. I'm trying to write the same type of thing. Just, you know, somebody gave an example a long time ago that worship songs are really hard to write. And I think they're crazy hard to write because it's almost like you're in a cafeteria and you are supposed to feed a whole slew of all these different people and you want to give them this meal, yet you want it to be really good. You don't want it just to be slop. But it's also got to hit all these people. So they're all able to pray this one prayer corporately together, which can also make for a very, very bland meal. And I think that's a struggle. That's a struggle for me, a struggle for a lot of us.
It's really sort of the struggle of all songwriting, isn't it? Is that it has to be specific and personal, and yet it also has to be something that is completely general, that there's universal meaning and that people can bring their own experience to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like remember Keith Green, he had a song.
Yes.
I mean, golly, the guy, genius. But he had a song called My Eyes Are Dry, My Heart, My Faith Is Old, My Heart Is Hard, My Prayers Are Cold, but I Know How I Ought to Be Alive to You and Dead to Me. I mean, it's just like the most amazing lament ever. Probably one of my favorite all-time songs. But that song doesn't do real great in like at a church service.
Right.
Yeah.
Because people are like, I'm actually doing great today, so why are you bringing me down? You know, so it's like, oh my gosh, how do you win?
So
yeah,
You know, I mentioned a minute ago this whole idea that, I mean, it's like the way of everything in 2021. Everything's getting sliced into thinner and thinner formats. So whether it's music or whether it's politics or culture, it's like we've got all these groups that don't talk to each other. Sam, I was looking back. I was looking back at your band.
Yeah.
And when you were around, I mean, your music was on Dawson's Creek. It was on ESPN. It was, you know, it was a Christian band, but it also was very much in the pop culture. And it just seems to me like that still happens, but it's way harder than it used to be because we just don't hear each other.
Yeah, I think there's just so much noise now that everybody can have a, you know, a studio in their house or a, like, you just see so much more, and maybe noise is the wrong word, but I love that it's accessible to so many people, but it's hard to sift, like, you know, what is that thing that's going to connect with the larger audience? Or, and you see those bands that happen, you know, or you see those songs that just do connect, but it's definitely, you know, we signed our first record deal in 1995. The world was way different then. There was no internet, or internet was a baby. You had to almost have something backing you to have any kind of broader, you know, maybe more than local or regional kind of voice. And so I just think things are so much more accessible and there's a real beauty to that, but there's also so much good stuff goes unheard and mm-hmm. so many great artists go unknown because there's so much happening.
Yeah. It's sort of this like glass half full, glass half empty, because the other side of that is you can thrive with just a tiny audience now, right? If you don't have to be everything, like you were saying, Tim, to everybody. You can have a smaller group of people who are really super passionate about your music, and that's a win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's, man, I think the thing that I've seen, especially again, kind of growing into this and, you know, starting as like a 19-year-old kid in the music industry, and then, you know, like I was kind of in an era of artists where everything was changing. You know, we're on the road and people are bringing these CDs that they've burnt from their, you know, like they burnt an MP3. Like, so we're trying to communicate to the labels, hey, this is happening, whether you like it or not, this is happening. So, how do you figure out, how to deal with this, how to manage it? But
all day.
Yeah, there's just so many, at least in my experience, like I get overwhelmed when it comes to, I'll turn on Spotify or something and turn on a band that I love, like Weezer or Jimmy World or something. And then all the, you know, there's 1,000 other bands that are kind of in that genre, however you say it. I always mess up the way you say that word, but anyway, some are just incredible and they're never going to, no one's ever going to see them. They're never going to hear the light of day because it's so noisy.
Well, I remember when my twin brother, Paul, and I came out with our first album with a band that we called the Jive Express. And we, you know, we were 22, 23 and,
wait, I don't want to interrupt you, Brett, but can we just like pause a minute and recognize the glory of that. Your band was called the Jive Express.
Jive Express. Yes.
Yeah. That is
glorious. It was based on Soul Train.
Yes.
You know, that whole thing. And our whole thought was, let's create music that makes people want to dance and we'll take the music to clubs around the country and kind of talk about what we believe. And people will want to dance to this music because it's good songs, hopefully, and they're great players. So that was the basic vision of it. And then when we come off the stage, we get to chat to people about what we're singing about. So that was the kind of the basic idea. But when the music came out, the radio station said to us, we don't know what to do with your music, because it was this really, I mean, it was jazz and funk and soul, and it was nothing like any other music that was being played. And it was interesting. It took a year or two, but eventually the followers of our band started calling into all the stations to say, hey, why aren't you playing this band? Why aren't you playing this band? And sadly for me, this is a whole nother story, but I never actually ended up getting to tour with that band. I kind of had to wave goodbye to them at the airport. But that experience of them suddenly having a following, again, like kind of before internet really was dominating like it is today, but it was the people that led to it being heard. Not like, I wonder from you, Caitlin, there must be such a massive influence on your generation as to, yeah, hey, you got to go and check out this artist and mm-hmm. and how they get traction,
yeah,
amongst it doesn't have to be a label pushing their content.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's almost, in some ways, I think it is now, the more you can build it yourself and the more you can be connected on social media and almost like these underdogs kind of coming up and just learning how to work with algorithms and how to be really relatable on this whole new intimate level through the screen. Like you guys are saying, it's a blessing and a curse because, you know, there's this new obsession with like, how do I build traction and be my own team? And it's really freeing creatively. But I mean, now it's a common thing to be on TikTok and just to try and get in the algorithms and see if you can get traction to get enough views and to get followers and to get, and it, these are really, really cool tools. And you have accessibility to these artists on a whole new level, but it's also, it's just a different ball game. It's really fascinating to see some of my good friends navigate it. I've navigated it a little bit and it just feels like a whole other world. First, you kind of build up your own thing. And then if you get backing from a label at some point, awesome. But it's kind of like not even the main thing that you're running after as an artist per se, in my opinion. So it's just fascinating to see like the shift of like what people a few years younger than me are navigating, and then watching those who've gone before me and how the transitions happened. It's a whole new world.
So I'm in a group right here of people who are amazing, not just artists, but technicians. You all have such value for production. And I really wanted to ask you this question because I'm a fan of the producer Rick Rubin's podcast, Broken Record.
Yes.
I don't know if you guys have ever listened to that podcast. It's amazing. The other week, he was in a conversation with the producer, Dave Cobb. And they had an interesting conversation for a few minutes about this idea that in many ways now, our capabilities are our biggest enemy. That production, like amazing production, can be the enemy of a great song. And Dave Cobb was saying, you know, he was actually talking, Brett, about the Beatles and about, oh gosh, who are some of the other older artists, and saying, I love them because they made an album in 3 days and it was raw, it was dangerous, it was unconventional, and they just went for it. And now you have 150 tracks that are all run through Pro Tools or Logic or whatever that are quantized to the grid and it's flawless. Even the worst song on the radio is flawless. And how do you make good music and do that? I want to hear your thoughts on that.
It's good. Hey, Grant, let me speak to that, because again, like our era of artists kind of was when all this, like we came in right before all of it changed, and we're in the process kind of when all of it did change. From, you know, like our first record, all you had was 24 tracks on 2-inch tape. It was all analog tape. Like that's how you recorded. And you could only do so many overdubs before it degraded the quality. Like, so you had to nail it. So part of what I think I've wrestled with in just a fan of music is, wow, you hear a song and you hear that chorus sounded exactly the same as the one previous. Well, it's because it is the exact same chorus. Rather than there being the unique kind of, differences in how a chord was played or the timing was just a little off. Like the human element of music has in lots of ways disappeared. And it's interesting to see now, if you kind of follow anything kind of more in the underground, there's all these bands that are coming out, and whether they're just tracking pretty raw, like live in the studio, or whether they're not focusing as much on perfection as they are in capturing the emotion of the song. And to me, that's exciting again. That's where music's getting cool and exciting for me again, rather than just, it's easy. I mean, you know, the term we would always use kind of jokingly, but it's easy to polish a turd. You know, it's easy to like take something that's just, you know, crappy and make it sound great. When you have all the technology that we have today. And there's a beauty to that, and there's a place for that. But I think there's a place for the human element. And I think oftentimes, again, this is just my opinion and what I enjoy and what I love, but I miss that about music, the human element that seems to be missing now.
You know, it seems like, Tim, it is so different, that would be such a big element to worship music in particular. That raw human element and the non-product. I just listened to one of your latest songs, and you had the studio version of it, and then you had the live from Journey Church version.
Yeah.
And I loved the studio version until I heard the live from Journey Church, and it's just like a whole different emotional experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a huge movement right now. I mean, you know, even Maverick City and a bunch of great people are just saying, hey, let's just get a guitar, drums, piano, and a bass player and a bunch of singers and get in a room, and we're all going to sing the fire out of the song and pray this thing, and that's what we're going to record. And that is actually, you know, way more listened to than anything else in those communities. Yeah, it's you know, something else I was just thinking, and I've never thought about this before, but, you know, when you look down on Spotify and you see all the different genres of all the different musics, we just have one genre, well, Christian and then gospel. And it's almost like we've tried to fit, you know, all the indie, punk, rap, I mean, all those country, you know, they're all like fit into this one little flow. And it makes so that everybody's vying for space in that one little place. And I think it does take the humanness out of it. Cause you kind of, you miss the rawness that actually leads forward. Like the rawness of some of that stuff, Beatles. And that was so raw on that day, but it's what moved the whole all the genres forward. And we don't really have that right now.
So,
well, and some of that was just, that was the technology they had to, to use. And so like, there's this balance of like, okay, yeah, we have all these great tools that are at our disposal, but when does it just go to, you know, AI or kind of just computer rather than capturing the real what's happening in the room, you know?
So Tim's next album is going to be a live punk worship album.
You weren't supposed to say that, Grant. Golly.
Top secret, man.
Yeah. I mean, I can't wait to hear that actually myself. I have one more question. And you don't have to all answer it, but it's just sort of a fun thing to think about. Again, I was thinking about, Rick Rubin and how he did so many, genre crossing things. Like when he recorded Johnny Cash. He had Johnny Cash do the Nine Inch Nails song, right? Hurt.
Yeah.
Amazing music, but completely out of context. So in an effort to broaden Christian music, if you could take one artist who we would not think about as being a Christian artist and have them record something, you're the producer now. Who would you record as a Christian artist, and what would you have them sing? Caitlin, go.
I have really grown to love how Billie Eilish interprets songs. Just the way the way her emotion comes through when she sings. She recorded a song, I think, when she was like 14 years old, just all on Logic. And she did, I think, like 38 takes on one part so that she didn't have to use auto-tune.
Wow.
So I feel like she's so young, and she's bringing back some of that authenticity and not over singing, like a lot of people in her genre, I think, are tempted to do. But man, a song that I would have her sing, I'd have to think about that. I just think it would make us all weep if she sang a song. Something like It Is Well, even. I mean, just like a classic hymn, if she sang it, I'd probably be on my face. So.
Love it. Anyone else?
I got a couple. One, actually, and this dude was in the Christian music industry, then he kind of moved in just to general market. But his voice is incredible. It's a guy named Brian McSweeney. Years and years ago, he was in a band called 7 Day Jesus. But his voice is just, you know, insane. And one of my favorite things that he ever did was a version of Oh Holy Night, which, you know, just coming out of Christmas. Go find it if you're listening to this. It's just an incredible, incredible version. And Tim, you were talking about Sleeping at Last. And one of my favorite artists worked with them early on, Billy Corgan, in the band called The Smashing Pumpkins. And, you know, for me, like, some of the stuff that the Smashing Pumpkins have done, like, I you know, it's kind of neither here nor there, but they have so many songs that I just really, really love. And they're one, he's one of my favorite songwriters and singers and just artists of all time. And so to hear a guy like that take hold of something that had, and he does in a lot of ways, I think, write songs that have a lot of more deep spiritual meaning than we recognize on the surface. So yeah, I think you got like Billy Corgan is a guy I'd love to hear.
That's great.
Yeah.
So good.
I'll just say, I mean, I don't even know what Macklemore would do, but I appreciate him so much. And I just think he would do some chorus, makes some awesome chorus just be awesome. And then he would put his own cool spin on his little rap section. But I think intensity wise, that guy's so great. And I'm going to, you know, I don't know, you can hate me all you want, but Coldplay is just so amazing.
I mean, we need to say it. Yeah.
It's just, yep. I think he's just, I mean, that last record that he did is genius. It is, talk about stripped back, just going pretty raw. Anyways, I'm truly a fan.
So
good.
Brett, I'm actually thinking you could pick up Billie Eilish and then you could put her with, like, for you, I'm thinking like a Nelson Riddle kind of arrangement or something and just go super amazing lush with it. What do you think?
Oh man, I'd be all about that. Put me in the studio there. But I actually went down a very different road. When you asked that question and I was listening to everybody, my brain went to Hans Zimmer, maybe because I mentioned him before. But just with his textures and cinematic quality and you know, the way he incorporates technology into his soundscapes. And I'd love to hear him. I found it very hard to pick a song or an artist, but I ended up going with a tune like Where the Streets Have No Name. Like I remember being at a U2 concert and hearing them play that. And it was one of the most profound God moments I've had in my life of just singing that to God. And I don't know, maybe why not? Let's get Stevie Wonder to have a go at singing that song. So yeah, Stevie Wonder singing Streets Have No Name with Hans Zimmer doing the music.
I love it. That's perfect.
With a candlestick in the library.
Go. Yep.
Guys, this has been so much fun. I wish we could just hang out and talk for another half hour, but thank you so much for being a part of it. I really appreciate all of you and just such a joy to be part of a community that has such a great musical love to it. So,
hey Grant, why do you listen to music?
Why do I listen to music?
Yep.
Oh, I'm the interviewer here. I'm the host. So I don't have to answer that question. We are so long right now.
Okay.
But for those of you, that's a great question, Tim. For those of you who are out listening to this right now, if you're enjoying the podcast, tell us why you listen to music. I'd love to bring you into the conversation. So what music are you listening to right now? What are you missing? What artist and song would be your dream Christian track? As always, you can contact me at grant@journeytn.com. That's grant@journeytn.com with any feedback or ideas. And if we get some good stuff, we'll share it next time. Meanwhile, thanks for joining us. Be sure to come back tomorrow for Theology Thursday. And I'll be here with another group of Journey pastors to talk with you again next week.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Journey Now podcast, please consider rating and reviewing us and subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for joining us today.